Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is Alan Sliwa, host of the Lakers pre- and post-game, Lakers Talk and the Sliwa Show. I'm here with Brad Wallace, one of the top personal injury trial lawyers in the game. Brad, tell our listeners why they need to call the Wallace Firm when they get hurt.
Alan, I'll put my courtroom record up against any other lawyer on the radio. We focus on getting our clients top results. You won't see my face on billboards and won't hear me play an annoying jingle. If you get injured, you need a real trial lawyer, not a marketing guy.
Call the Wallace Firm now, 844-844-WINS, or visit WallaceWins.com today.
So one of the big topics that came out of yesterday of The Last Dance, I mentioned this to Mason in Ireland. By the way, Funch, remember when we used to talk about sports
yeah,
that were
right?
going on?
Yeah, right.
You remember that?
Yeah, where we had actual live games on and not like a replay of a Monday Night Football game from like 2007 on right now?
What are we right now? So this would have been the start of the second week of the playoffs.
Like second round, right? And
just the second week. Okay. So, you know, maybe it would be four games in at this point of the first round. But it's kind of crazy to think because before all this stopped, we were rolling. Like, I'm just talking about in general, right? Like the station. I mean, the topics were insane, the different directions that you can go. And at that time, I was just kind of starting the Sliwa Show. But let's just use Lakers as an example. I cannot tell you how many different Laker topics would come up every day, right? And remember, the Lakers had just in the buyout market, they got Markieff Morris. And then, what's his name? Dion Waiters was somebody that looks like, you know, they were adding
yet,
as well.
Alan. He hasn't even played
right,
yet.
Right, he hasn't played yet. So it's like, it's just so interesting how everything was rolling and the world just came to a complete stop. And in sports, it, you know, definitely did as well. I mean, I did the NFL draft show on Thursday and Friday with Kirk Morrison. That was the first time where I felt like, oh, we have like, this is a normal day of sports, but it's still without any live sports. Just crazy, man. Just crazy. So yesterday, this is what I was kind of getting to with Mason in Ireland when we started Crosstalk. I said that there's one thing that really, really stuck out to me in that documentary from episode 3 and episode 4. Rodman was the storyline, but it wasn't what Rodman was doing that caught my attention. It was Phil Jackson, that conversation that he's having, trying to convince Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, but specifically Michael Jordan, that, hey, we got to let Dennis go on a vacation. I mean, in the middle of the season, Dennis has to go on vacation for, you know, he said 48 hours. And Jordan responding back saying, Phil, what the hell are you talking about? We're going to let Dennis go on a vacation. If you let Dennis go, let alone let him go to Las Vegas, we're not getting Dennis back. The reason why that stood out to me is when Phil was coaching the Lakers, in those first three championships that the Lakers won and the Lakers going to the finals 4 out of 5 years, I always thought this guy, I'm like, gosh, the way he treats these players, like there's no blueprint for any player. Every player is different. And, you know, in order for – I think one of the things that was so fascinating about Phil, he understood that at the end of the day, we are either going to win as a team or we're going to lose as individuals. And that's all he paid attention to. And his ego, like he's coming from the Chicago Bulls. He had 6 NBA championships, probably all the money in the world. Like there's nothing left for him to accomplish. He can have the biggest ego in the world. And maybe he did. You know, I didn't deal with him on a day-to-day basis. I'm sure there's other journalists that have been, you know, a part of the Lakers or following the Lakers for years. But when I say he didn't have an ego, I just go back to that Bulls documentary. That's the thing that jumps out to me. What jumps out to me is he convinces the greatest player in the world that it's important for Dennis Rodman to go on a binge for 48 hours in Vegas. Why? Because he felt like that's the best. They'll get the best out of Dennis Rodman when he comes back. And also why that's going to make sense for the team on their journey to win, you know, another NBA championship. Okay, that's one example. How about the time Lakers versus the Bulls in the playoffs in the finals, and they're showing it. You know, they're showing it yesterday in the documentary where during a timeout, Phil Jackson looks at Michael Jordan and says, you got to start passing the ball. Paxson is open. Get Paxson the ball. He's open. Phil Jackson is telling Michael Jordan in the NBA finals not to get to the basket, not to find his spot on the floor, not to have somebody, Bill Cartwright, set a screen for him. No, he's telling him, find John Paxson. And if you look at that Chicago Bulls team, there were always other players that hit big shots. Steve Kerr, John Paxson, big moments for Tony Kukoc, big moments for Scottie Pippen, Ron Harper. There were always other players that contributed. Horace Grant, could kind of go down the list. That approach by head coach Phil Jackson, you know, obviously at the time of the Chicago Bulls, that's one of the characteristics I love and I appreciate more for Phil Jackson than anything else, because we saw him do it for the Lakers. For the Lakers, we knew how good Kobe was, but it wasn't about Kobe taking a ton of bad shots. It was actually about Kobe finding times to make other players a threat on the team as well, so that less attention went on Kobe, which then eventually freed up the game for Kobe Bryant. Another moment that I thought, you know, I think was maybe kind of easily passed over yesterday in that documentary. Look how much Jerry Krause was just got demolished in those first two episodes. Those first two episodes with Jerry Krause, you saw Krause labeled as this guy in that 97-98, that final dance, that final run, the last dance, as a villain. And by the way, rightfully so. But I thought, at least yesterday, Jerry Krause made some bold, bold moves for the Chicago Bulls. And one of those bold moves was Doug Collins, who was Michael Jordan's guy. That was the guy that, you know, you saw after the shot over Elo, what he said to the reporters, basically saying, everybody get that, you know, bleep out of the way and give the ball to Michael Jordan. That was Jordan's guy. And that was a, you know, a player, or that was a coach that a lot of players liked. You could tell, you could see when they won their first game against the Knicks at the Madison Square Garden, you could tell that he was a player's coach. And he had the you-know-what to fire him and put Phil Jackson there. You got to give Krause credit for that. There's actually a lot of things that you got to give Krause credit for, but then you also have to point the finger at Krause of kind of being the part that – the downfall of it all. And maybe as they were stacking NBA championships and they were continuing to win, maybe that's part of the reason why Krause felt like, you know, he wasn't getting enough credit. What a documentary. Damn, did we need this documentary. But like I said, whether this was now in a time where there's no live sports, or even if there was live sports, we'd all be watching it. That's how good it is. All right, Shootout coming up next. Myself and Michael Funches. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. Funches, how we doing, bud?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. How about in crosstalk, right in the middle of crosstalk? No joke. You know, when I mentioned it, just a coyote roaming around, just hanging out by the
house. Yeah, how? That's weird, man.
It's, you know, I've got to be honest with you, man. They're
you like
all,
live in a city, man, not like close to the woods or, you know, out there.
They're all over here.
Really?
They are all over
in
this
Silver
area.
Lake. I can't in see Silver that.
So they're always howling, by the way, you know, late at night. And if you just drive, like, it's not uncommon once a week to just see a coyote, you know, roaming around. Or at night when I'm driving, you know, they're just a coyote sprinting, just trying to get out of the light.
Wow. I have coyotes roaming around my neighborhood too, and I walk with two small dogs in the morning, and I'm just petrified that they're going to come and gang up on us and eat my dogs.
Well, you will be the protector of your dogs. I mean, listen, you know, obviously with humans around, they're scared, but they're not that, you know, here's the thing. They're not that scared. You know,
yeah,
like
not,
they, when they
not.
See a human, they just kind of, it's not like they take off.
No.
They just kind of stand, they look around, they kind of look you in the eyes,
yeah.
Like, I mean, if you go and you try, if you run at them, they're going to, you know, take off.
Yeah, of course.
But for the most part, yeah, they're comfortable.
I mean, if they're roaming around in a pack, that's when they become more bold. And I've seen them roam around in a pack.
How big of a pack? I haven't seen...
Like three or four of them.
Mm.
And they're just like looking at me and then looking at my dogs and... One time I saw three or four of them in a park and I had to like hide behind a bench while they walked by.
Right?
Yeah. So I had to keep my dogs quiet, you know, and stuff like that. So
were your dogs scared as hell?
No, I mean, one dog would think
they don't know what's going on.
Well, I mean, yeah, one dog didn't know what was going on. The other dog saw the coyotes and wanted to fight them. And he's like the smallest dog.
Dogs are freaking funny, man. Dogs are freaking funny. Okay, so I'll keep everybody updated if we have any coyotes on the lookout. This is where we are in life right now. We stare out our window, and I give play-by-play for coyotes if there's anything going on.
We give them play-by-play on something, man.
Yeah, that's what we got to do. All right, let's get some shootout going. All right, as you know, by the way, what a beautiful beat. Funches, as you know, shootout presented by the Wallace Firm. Call 844-844-WINS for a free consultation and review of your insurance policy to see if you are eligible for compensation for operating expenses and or lost revenue. I'm talking about business owners out there. 844-844-WINS. Appreciate the partnership for Brad Wallace and the Wallace Firm. What's going on, Funch? So, good weekend for you?
Yeah. What did I do? I watched a couple movies on Netflix, and other than that, I, you know, just chilled, man.
Any good movies on Netflix that I need to know
there's
about?
There's one movie, Extraction. It has Thor, Chris Hemsworth, and it just came out on Friday, and it's pretty darn good. It was almost like a John Wick-like type film.
Okay, I got to tell you about a series I just watched. I binge watched it. Have you heard of Rise of Empires, Ottoman?
No, not at all.
Awesome. Basically, this storyline. It's only six episodes. They're about 45 minutes each, but it's kind of a unique storyline because they're taking you back of when the Ottoman Empire attacks the Constantinople and the Romans. Okay.
That's over my head.
So, by the way, it is for me too. I didn't think I'd get into this, but it was all like war centric. It was all like, all right, how does the Romans in Constantinople was like nobody could break through, right? So they have this ginormous wall. They're surrounded by water. Nobody had ever been able to break through. I think 23 different, I don't want to call them armies, but 23 different, rulers tried to get through. Nobody was able to.
Wow, no.
And it's fascinating because in the middle of like an episode, they'll go to these historians and they'll start saying this. They'll like describe from like a library. Or whatever.
Oh, so it's a documentary type thing.
Kind of a documentary, but it's obviously footage that they recreated. So it's really good. So if you get a chance on Netflix, I highly recommend it.
I'll check it out.
What's
it's
up,
six
players?
Episodes.
What's up, players?
All right, Island. Thanks, man. Thanks for sticking around, man.
That's John, by the way.
Yeah.
What's up, players?
Right.
Play it again.
What's up, players?
Oh, my gosh. That's
so good.
Does not
sound like the whitest guy in the room anymore with that one, right?
What's up, players?
That is good. How about today in the middle of the game with Ireland or with Mace? He's like, that's it.
He pulled the Detroit Pistons.
You cheaters. I'm out of here. Okay. What do you got there?
All right, so more gasoline was added to the fire of the beef between Charles Barkley and Draymond Green. Now, remember earlier in the NBA season, while the Warriors were going through their struggles, Barkley said this about Draymond.
He had his normal triple single.
Golden State.
Why are you on him so hard? He didn't talk all that stuff when he got those other boys with him.
Now, on the newest All the Smoke podcast, which is an extremely good podcast with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson, Draymond Green said this about Charles Barkley and why he goes at him all the time.
I got a lot of respect for Charles Barkley, the basketball player, man. As a fan of basketball growing up, Charles Barkley was a great basketball player. He never won shit. Charles Barkley has kind of had this beef with me since I started coming up. You know what I'm saying? Since I started coming up in this league, it's always him throwing a shot. And for years, I didn't respond. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, whatever, you know, Charles Barkley's a great player. Like, I'm not going to respond, whatever. And it's just keep throwing a shot. Honestly, it's jealousy. You know what I'm saying? It's jealousy that somebody the same size as him or smaller could come in the league and have the success I had, make the money I've made, win the championships I've won. These are all things that Charles Barkley wasn't able to do.
All right, so Draymond have a point, and once and for all, Alan, who is the better player, Barkley or Draymond?
By the way, I can't tell you how much I love the triple single comment.
That is
so
like my
good.
Favorite thing ever.
And this is what
and
makes
he's so
it
right.
So good. This is what makes it so good too. It's Shaq laughing. The way Shaq is laughing just kills me. You know what I mean? Because Shaq is genuinely dying of laughter.
Yeah.
So I love that. Who's the better player between Draymond and Barkley? I mean, listen, in my opinion, it's no question about it. Of course, it's Charles Barkley. But, you know, Draymond doesn't have to try to be Charles Barkley. He doesn't need to be.
No, not at all.
What he signed? He signed a contract recently. Didn't he get 4 years, 100, maybe?
Yeah,
something like
that.
Four years, 100. I think he just got that. I mean, think about Draymond. Think about his career. He's going to go down as just a critical, critical piece to winning an NBA championship.
Now,
did they have three? They got three of them?
Yeah, they got three of them.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you one question, though.
Yeah.
If Draymond Green stopped playing today, is he a Hall of Famer? Just based on the championships and, you know, all that stuff.
That's a great question. Listen, I will tell you this. I don't know if I can answer that right now. I will tell you this. He was critical to those championships. Critical.
Yeah, I know.
Now, listen, when KD came, he still had obviously an important role, but when KD came, it was like, okay, well, you know, I could go suit up for that team. We're going to win a chip. So I do think that, you know, where I really see Draymond Green as the biggest piece is before KD came. When KD came, his value, not that Draymond Green didn't have value, but his value obviously diminished a little bit because the best, second best player in the NBA was joining a team that had already won an NBA championship. So, but listen, I want to go back to this. There is no reason for Draymond Green to worry about Charles Barkley. Draymond's got money. Draymond's got chips. Draymond, if you know basketball, you know how big Draymond Green was to that Warriors team and how much he kind of sacrificed his game. We just got a chance to watch Dennis Rodman, that documentary yesterday. Did you see that stat where he has 7 games in the NBA with 20 rebounds and 0 points?
Yeah, yeah.
Or more than 20 rebounds?
Yeah.
Do you know what a remarkable stat that is? That is
just a concentrate on one thing.
Literally doesn't care about offense and just cares about playing defense and grabbing rebounds. That's how you win chips. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when you have guys like that on your team, yeah.
100%. So, you know, when I say he's got nothing to worry about, nothing to compare him to, yeah, Barkley's going to take shots at him. Barkley enjoys taking shots at him. Is it fair? No, it's probably not fair, but I don't think you should pay attention to him.
Yeah, obviously Barkley is in Draymond's head, you know, right now.
He's definitely in Draymond's head.
I mean, he Draymond said it, you know, he has more money than him, he has more championships on him, but he still, you know, when Barkley says something, Draymond goes irate. So
what Draymond should do every time Barkley says anything about him, he should just have a couple like quick one-liners, actually, I'm not – Draymond's going to approach it the way he wants to approach it. But I thought, by the way, in the podcast, and I heard that over the weekend too,
yeah.
I thought he explained himself perfectly. I thought him explaining that the way Shaq would go after JaVale McGee, that wasn't right. You know, like that was too much. It was going over the line. He feels like Barkley's gone over the line with him. Okay, that's all right. That's his opinion. But here's the reality. The reality is Draymond's got championships. Draymond has a role in the Warriors. Draymond has made a lot of money in the league. Draymond's good.
Whenever I hear the shots taken at Draymond, you know, on Inside NBA by Barkley, like, I don't see malicious intent in that. I think he's just joking around. But
they're funny as hell.
Yeah, it's funny as hell, but I think Draymond takes it to another level, you know? Like, he shouldn't be doing this.
They're funny as hell, and that's what makes Barkley so good. That's what makes Shaq so good. Like, you know, sometimes there's games during the regular season,
yeah.
and it's two teams that, let's say, are not going to make the playoffs, or one team that's really good and one team that's not.
I know Barkley says, yeah.
And they're just like, we got to be here the
whole
game.
You know, why are we watching this? Why are we watching the highlights again?
Bro, but that's what makes Barkley so entertaining, because he says exactly what's on his mind, and it's freaking funny. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, Draymond needs to just take a step back, because, you know, Barkley's just having a good time, and, you know, I don't think he means it maliciously.
And I think Draymond definitely takes things to the heart. You know what I mean? Like, I think Draymond's definitely one of those is sensitive.
Yeah. Strip day! Thank you, John Ireland. Didn't know today was strip day.
go to the first one with Ireland again.
What's up, players?
All right.
I love that. I never knew that was him.
So Jay-Z sporting agency, Roc Nation Sports, just made three big signings today, and all three Ball brothers. LaMelo, Lonzo, and the other one. The middle one. Jello.
LaMelo, LiAngelo, and Lonzo.
Yeah, that's right. Said LaMelo's agent, Jermaine Jackson, Jay-Z is a master at what he does. He's global. It's a power beyond power. This is something that they've been building from the ground up together. They are brothers. They love each other, and that's how they roll. It's all love. They don't separate from each other. Now, currently, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant are the basketball clients on Roc Nation's, you know, on their roster. Also, Saquon Barkley and Juju Smith-Schuster are two big-time NFL players on this roster as well. Was this a good or bad move for the Ball brothers?
I like it. I actually really like it. I'll tell you what. I like the affiliation with Roc Nation. I like the affiliation with Jay-Z. I like that all three of them are sticking together. Like, I like the concept and the idea behind it. You know where the Ball brothers are such a marketable group, right? And I don't know what's going to end up happening to LiAngelo, but it sounds like he's going to be a very high draft pick. Or no, I'm sorry, that's Melo.
LaMelo,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, LaMelo will be like a top three. He'll be a top three in 2020 draft.
He'll be a top three pick. Lonzo might not be the, you know, the most.
He's coming up though, man. If you look at his numbers,
but I like his style. Yeah. I like it. You know what I mean? Like, me personally, I like Lonzo. I love the fact that, Funch, there's a point guard out there that wants to play defense and dish the rock.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen often.
And his presence doesn't show in the numbers. You know, if you watch the games,
agreed,
you can see his presence. But then if you look at his numbers and just a box score, you think that he's not that good.
The point I'm making is that there's an incredible amount for these guys to grow on the basketball court. But take them off the court, they're very well known. You know what I mean? Like that Facebook, the Ball brothers, whatever, or the Ball family, whatever that was, that Facebook thing, it took them outside of being popular to just basketball players, basketball fans. So there's something there. You know, I think they got something to work with, and it's not going to be just your regular shoe deal and that's it. I feel like there's going to be a lot of opportunities around the Ball brothers. And you know, part of this has to do with LaVar Ball was such a loudmouth for so long. He really put a lot of these kids on the map, some to their detriment, and then maybe this to their advantage, because they are very marketable. We'll see what happens, but I like the move.
Yeah,
you like it or no?
I love it, you know, because the past two or three years, we've just been hearing just bad things about the Big Baller Brand, LaVar, and, you know, the brothers and blah, blah, blah. Now they're with Jay-Z, and look what he's done for, you know, Saquon, Kevin Durant, Kyrie. It brings him respectability instantly.
Well, like I said, I really think that's a brand. You know, however they kind of the route that they take of how they want to promote these guys and how they want to market them and what companies they're going to be affiliated with, they got something. It's unique. It's very unique. Where other do you have, even if it's just, let's say, Melo and Lonzo are the only two NBA players, just hypothetically, right? Let's say Jello never makes it into the league. Where else do you have two brothers like that that are this marketable, that are in the league at the same time? You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get that with Brooke Lopez and, you know, and Robin Lopez, right? For how young these players are, they're very, very marketable. So I'm curious to see where it goes. I think it's a a good move for the Ball brothers, and I think it's a good move for Roc Nation.
I agree with you, man. I agree with you.
I am wrong.
Ireland, I don't know what you're wrong for, but, you know, I'm glad you admit it.
The fact that John is hanging out on the show at 8:10.
After he pistons you guys during that game.
Yeah, he just took off.
He just took off. He didn't shake your hand or anything.
Steve doing the buzzer, just going, Steve. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? I'm in the middle of my question.
All right. I got a trivia question. Since we saw the Dennis Rodman-centric Last Dance episode last night, I have a trivia question. Only four guys led the league in rebounding in the 90s. Can you name them?
So the top four guys to lead the league in rebounds in the 90s?
Yeah, there is only four guys that led the league in rebounding in the 90s. Can you name them?
Oh, okay. So each season there was one of these four guys.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
David Robinson on there?
There's one.
Okay, there's one. Dennis Rodman's one of the four, so there's two left. Okay. Geez, who are the other? Am I overthinking, or do I need to overthink a little bit?
Yeah. Just think about, you know, late 90s. Guys are really good.
Okay. I'll go Barkley. Malone.
Let's just say we played this guy a lot in the playoffs.
We played this guy a lot in the playoffs.
In the early 2000s.
Okay. We played this guy a lot in the playoffs in the early 2000s. C-Web?
One more, and I'll just give you one clue. The Lakers played against this guy in their three-peat championship, the last three-peat championship. In early 2000s.
All right. Early 2000s. So last NBA championship. So who did we go? We went Indiana. We played Philly. We played the Nets. Who the hell was on that Nets team? Or was Philly the last one? No, Philly was the second one. What the hell was on that Nets team? It's not Kenyon Martin. Was Dikembe on that Nets team? No, he was on the Philly team.
Dikembe Mutombo. He was not on the Nets team, but he was on a 76ers team. And he got traded mid-year to Philly, and then they made the finals, and they played the Lakers.
You know, seeing those Rodman highlights, by the way, man, what an appreciation for his game. Honestly, like, what an appreciation. You know, Funch, I don't know how you get during these documentaries, but anytime you watch, like, good documentaries, bro, they're just fantastic.
I know, you just don't want it to run out.
You know, and it's just like in the moment. I loved Rodman telling that story. How about Rodman telling that story? He's in the middle of saying that he would have other players. He'd have friends of his at the gym so they could just shoot.
I know, like me and you.
So he studied where the ball was coming off the rim. So then by the time, you know, he got to games, he knew, okay, you're shooting from that spot. I know that if it hits this part of the rim, then I'm going to already go to the spot. You know how much, like, there's such a science to that and a repetition
Did you see Dennis talking about it? And he broke it down like a science, man.
That's what I loved. I mean, I think that's such a art that's underappreciated, right? Like, there's so many small things that help you win. If it's football, it could be, you know, nobody paying attention to the type of blocks at the line for a running back to break through, right? But that's winning football. For baseball, it could be just the smallest inch for a pitcher that hits the outside corner on a consistent basis that ends up getting the win or whatever the case is, right? Or defensive strategy.
Yeah.
But it's those small things. I think in basketball, man, rebounding is such an underappreciated but could be the difference of winning a championship or not.
Very, very true, man. Very, very true.
Let's get after it.
John, let's do it. All right. Also, on The Last Dance last night, we saw the beef between Isaiah Thomas and MJ, even to this day. Now, we always heard...
There was some real beef there.
Dude, man, I didn't know it was like that.
Michael was still incredibly bitter about that moment.
Yeah, so we always heard the rumors that MJ kept Isaiah off the Dream Team as if Isaiah was... Yeah. So let's just hear Michael Jordan talk about it real quick.
This is Isaiah talking about the walk-off.
Well, I know it's all bull.
Whatever he says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know, it's time enough to think about it. Or the reaction of the public that's kind of changed his perspective of it. Yeah. You can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he wasn't an ass.
See, the beef is real. Beef is still real in 2020, man.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we always heard the rumors that MJ kept Isaiah off the Dream Team. As if Isaiah was on it, Michael was off of it. Now, let's just say Isaiah and MJ didn't have this beef. All was good in the world, and Isaiah makes the Dream Team. Mm-hmm. What spot, whose spot does Isaiah take?
I think he's taking John Stockton.
Oh, you think so?
Alan? Yeah, just because here's why. It was 1992, right? So Isaiah was still, you know, one of the best guards in the NBA. I don't think Stockton, remember, Stockton didn't make it to the finals with Malone.
Oh, no.
When?
No, 97,
right?
97, they made it back-to-back 97-98.
97-98. That's right. So I think Stockton goes because there's your point guard. You don't know what Stockton was going to eventually become. Listen, let's not think about that Pistons team. They had to go through the Boston Celtics. They had to go through the Los Angeles Lakers. Eventually, they were going through the Chicago Bulls. Like, they're playing Bird, Magic, and Michael Jordan to win chips. Isaiah Thomas was the best player on that team. So he's 100% getting on that Dream Team, deserves to be on that Dream Team, and probably would have took Stockton's spot. Who else would he have taken?
I want to say
the Leitner thing. What the hell is Leitner doing?
I know. I want to say
– I was just picking a point guard.
I want to say Chris Mullin because, you know, at that time, you know, Magic contracted HIV. We didn't know a lot about the disease back then, so we don't know how much time – Magic could give to the Dream Team. We don't know how much he can play. So what I was thinking, like, you have Magic, then you have John Stockton, and then you have Isaiah because you don't know what Magic could do.
Hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, it's unfortunate. Like I was mentioning this a little bit earlier. No joke on this one, Funch. Kind of BS. If he didn't make the Dream Team because of that moment, it really actually makes Jordan look bad.
I mean, I was 11 years old, and I understand that Isaiah Thomas needed to make this team.
I had somebody hit me on Twitter, and they were disagreeing. I'll actually read this off here. Sunyar Music says, I disagree. You're taught to have good sportsmanship as a child, so if you can keep your composure on a team in the NBA and show good sportsmanship, do we... Excuse me there, Funches. Excuse me, Funches. Do we want you representing the country? So... That was one take. But let me say this. Come on. Look at all these players. You think players were perfect?
Everybody's had a mean streak, man.
But no, just think about that roster. What Barkley was perfect? Barkley wasn't.
No. Barkley. Alan, you know what he did during the Olympics, right? He elbowed a guy from Angola.
That's right. And Barkley was, I'm not a role model.
And he didn't even, like, apologize for it.
Barkley was like, I'm not a role model. Don't look at me. Don't this. So if you want to talk about, you know, good sportsmanship, I'm all good. I'm good with that. But that means every player in the league's got to be flawless on it. That's not the case. And by the way, that's the perception the Pistons had. They were the bad boys. They weren't the freaking preppy boys. Like, that's what they were. They did all the things that you didn't want them to do, or they did all the wrong things, but that's how they won their chips.
I mean, to this day, I still believe it was Michael Jordan that kept Isaiah Thomas off the team because, I mean, we were talking about it earlier with Ireland. Ireland believes that, you know, not only Michael Jordan, you know, had the veto power, but the other guys had to be veto power. And I don't believe that because Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas were very close. And I really think that
I agree.
You know, if Magic Johnson was probably cool with Isaiah, but then they really, you know, the world really wanted Michael Jordan on the team. So
put it
Isaiah
way,
had to go.
If Jordan said, hey, I'm all good, guys. Let's just go get the gold. I don't care if Isaiah's on here or he's not. Let's just go get the gold. You don't think he would have been on that team?
I totally, 100% would have believed that he would have been on that team.
Of course he would have been on that team. So that's what I'll kind of, you know, as I kind of referenced yesterday, that's kind of the storyline that came out. But that storyline, I kept saying to myself, and Isaiah was trying to be apologetic. I'm like, you don't got to be apologetic.
Nah, man.
It's all good.
Not
like,
at
that's
all.
That's how it was in those
Bill
days.
Bill Laimbeer didn't apologize this morning, man.
And I kind of like it. I kind of like that. Laimbeer was like, yep, that's how it was. I'm not going to sit here and apologize. You guys don't like it? Don't freaking like it. But that was the Pistons.
Yeah.
That was their...
That's the bad boy Pistons. You know,
that was
they're not going to apologize for that.
That
I'm
was
stupid.
Their shtick.
I'm stupid.
Ireland, you're not stupid, man. There's no stupid people in this world. All right. More on The Last Dance.
Yep.
Now, we were talking about the Phil Jackson allowing Dennis Rodman 48 hours in Vegas to where it turned into 96 hours. And then having the greatest player ever go to his hotel room while he was with Carmen Electra. And here's what Carmen Electra said last night.
There's a knock on the door. It's Michael Jordan. And I hid. I didn't want him to see me like that. So I'm just like hiding behind the couch with covers over me. Come on. You got to get to practice.
That's just crazy to me that Michael Jordan, the greatest player ever, goes to get Dennis Rodman to come to practice, whatever. But anyway, Alan, so we all know Dennis was a legendary partier, just like some of the other players in NBA history. So, Alan, you have one night in Vegas. What NBA player, past or present, are you partying with until the wee hours?
That's awesome. All right, so I got to give this some thought. So one NBA player.
Yeah.
That you're partying with.
You're going to a nice dinner, maybe a club, maybe the after hours club, whatever.
Bro, who would be better to party with? I just think, like, personality wise, how good would Shaq be to be out there with?
Oh, he's gonna, it's gonna be like the Pied Piper or something, man. Everyone's gonna be following him, and you're gonna have a good time, man. And plus, he's an EDM DJ.
All right, so Shaq would definitely be on there. The only problem is if he's partying all night, I'm like, 1 a.m.
Oh,
like,
yeah, he's probably starts his set at 3 o'clock in the morning or something.
Yeah, Shaq, have a good night, bro. I'm gonna go to bed. That's happening definitely by 1 a.m. So let's now take Shaq off the list after you explained it that way. Who'd be another good one? Kobe would have basically had dinner, had a glass of wine, and then called it a night.
Yeah, he's like, I got to go train in the morning. I'm sorry, guys.
I got to go train in the morning. Exactly.
Guys.
Shaq wasn't worried about that. Who do you have? Who jumps out in your mind?
I mean, obviously, Dennis Rodman. He's partying, for 96 straight hours.
I wouldn't be able to hang an hour and a half with Dennis.
I think I can hang maybe 4 hours with Dennis because I'm not much of a drinker, but he drinks a lot, so I'm probably going to pass out in that 4 hours. Like, I'm going to pass out hunched out over on a table somewhere.
Every clip we saw of Rodman yesterday, he was taking a shot.
Yeah.
By the way, how about – this is the crazy thing, and people are like this. There's definitely people. I mean, I would say actually in college, there are people who can party at night, right? Like, just freaking party.
Yeah.
And then wake up in the morning and just go make it happen. Go back to work. Rodman was obviously one of those guys.
I can't do that. Like, I know people like that, too. They can stay up all night, party to 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever.
When I was 21, I could do that.
Yeah.
Okay? I could do that. If you told me now to go till midnight, I would in my head and, really be drinking.
Yeah.
Bro, I'm out for a day and a half.
My God, yes, me too, man.
I'm
it would take
reserve.
You like one day to recover. It takes me 2 days to recover now.
I remember, Funch, back in the days, we would I was working actually at a radio station back then. I was on the promo team.
Yeah.
Okay. So there would be setups early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Think of the – this is
yeah,
the
yeah,
genre
yeah, yeah.
I
like
was
a 5
for.
Or 6 o'clock in the morning, you guys have to set up
yep.
something. Yeah.
This is what it was. I worked for a jazz and a country station.
Oh, my
because,
God.
Because 690 – remember 690 yeah. back in the days?
Yeah.
690 was in San Diego. That's what it was based off of. Just got sold to L.A., so there was no sports station in San Diego at the time.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's right.
I went from interning at 690 to getting a job, and then it got sold within like 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
Now I'm at a country station and a jazz station. Those are the two stations that I'm working for. And I would go, at San Diego State University with a couple of my buddies. We'd party. 3-4 in the morning, you go to bed. I would be – not all the time, but, just on a weekend or something like that. Or even 2 o'clock, you go to bed. I'd have to get up for 4 o'clock to set up for promotions.
Oh my God.
Because we have to check in at 5. And then there was this a fest, a carnival or something like that. We had to be set up for. I'm like, what the hell is going on? If I tried doing that today, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Right. I have to be here for the Mason Ireland show. I think I would miss Mason Ireland. I'd miss this show and I'd miss the whole next day.
I would miss a week. One
yeah,
week
right?
I'm out.
96 hours. Yep. I'll be out. That's all I got for
awesome,
you, man.
Man.
That's all I got for you, man.
All right, Funches. Thank you, brother. Okay, hey, I promoted a little bit earlier. Bobby Marks, these facilities in certain states are opening up
Looks like May 8th is going to be the new timeline, the new deadline. So Bobby Marks is going to get us, he's going to get us all caught up on this. That's coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. If you want to be a part of the show, I'll take some more phone calls in about 15 minutes or so. 877-710-ESPN. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Lakers Talk. Always appreciate Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN, taking some time and joining the show. Bobby, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing all right. Doing okay. I know we're all there. If there's one thing about Mondays and Fridays for at least the next 4 weeks or so, Mondays will react to what happened in that documentary. Fridays will preview what's going to happen in the documentary. just your quick thoughts. What have you thought so far of the first four episodes? How have you enjoyed kind of looking back 20 plus years ago and looking at, you know, arguably one of the greatest teams to ever do it in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, episodes 3 and 4, which were on, you know, Sunday night, I think it made, gave me a greater appreciation for Phil Jackson. And I know you guys, you know, had him in Los Angeles for a long time and won a lot of championships there. But I think just the, what he was able to do there as far as not just X's and O's, but, managing that locker room, right? That's part, half of the battle right there as far as managing all those different personalities, managing a situation where you had so many guys on the last year of a contract, and it was made well known that, you know, Jerry Krause did not want anything to do with you when the season ended. And I think it gave me a better appreciation of that. I think it, you know, certainly it goes, it's probably the quickest 2 hours of the night or the day, and you want more. But I think I appreciate that they didn't just put all 10 episodes on there and let us binge for 2 days. we can space it out for the next few weeks. But yeah, it does bring you back because, you know, things were so much different, you know, back in the 90s, you know, how the contracts were structured, how teams were built, you know, how things, it would be interesting if this team, if that 98 team was in this day and age, right, where social media and how things are scrutinized, would that team, could that team have survived? I don't know if it could have.
Well, Bobby, it is interesting because, you know, I'll do this. I am as big of a fan of Phil Jackson as they come. And had Michael Thompson was on a little bit earlier, and we got to talk about, you know, his time when he played against the Chicago Bulls. The Lakers lost that championship to Jordan and the Bulls. But you said how it kind of highlights Phil Jackson. Man, that's one of the things that was such an amazing characteristic of Phil, was the ability to look at all these different personalities and instead of butt heads with all them, actually just find a way to make it work, find a way to can you imagine him telling Dennis Rodman it's okay to go to Vegas for 48 hours? But he knew in the big picture that will eventually help the team if he didn't do it. And I think that's such a unique quality that Phil has always had. He's had that ability to know when to pull, know when to kind of let go a little bit. And I'm with you that yesterday, I think, highlighted some of that.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, even in the episodes last week, 1 and 2, and we went through the whole Scottie Pippen situation with his contract, and you know, Scottie basically having surgery right before training camp started, and then Phil was like, "Yeah, I'm okay with it, right? Like, I get it. Like, I'm not going to kind of, you know, kind of hold his feet over the fire." And he knew the personalities of his own players. I think the fascinating part, especially for this day and age of, you know, generation is that, you know, we know how great of a player that Michael Jordan was, but how Jordan was had to basically sacrifice, right, for the betterment of the team. It's almost like kind of like, is this what James Harden is going to need to go through in Houston? You know, somewhere similar where basically it's going to be team-based, you know, basketball. In Chicago, it was, you know, we're going to implement the triangle, and it's, you're not going to get, you know, 45 points, but if we can kind of win and you know, move the ball, that's going to be the betterment. And Jordan was able to kind of sacrifice that.
Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN, Jordan Lakers Talk. Bobby, can you give us just the latest? You know, we got some information, I want to say yesterday, and then today was a little bit more updated on individual workouts in cities not subject to government restrictions. For those that don't exactly know how all that works and what that means for maybe their own team here in LA, obviously the Lakers, the Clippers. What is some of the information that came out today?
Yeah, I think it's kind of more proactive from the NBA because, you know, certainly there are situations in states that have started to loosen their guidelines. I think probably Georgia was the first state here to kind of be proactive here. Originally it was thought of that May 1st was going to be when teams were going to allow players back into their facilities in the states that had, I guess, if you were either in a phase one or phase two. Now it's May 8th for those states where if your guidelines have loosened, certainly the two teams the teams in California don't qualify, or the teams in New York, and I think a good majority of teams. If you are one of those states that qualify and you have an NBA team, that you will allow, I think you can only have four players in your facility at one time. Assistant coaches or head coach can't be on the floor. It's really just to kind of get in there and maybe get a sweat going and get shots up. But the restrictions are still, these guys are still restricted as far as what you can do. And even to the point where I saw Travis Schlenk, who's the GM in Atlanta, they've got a state where things have loosened up, basically say, no, we're not right. We're not there yet. Right. Like we're going to adhere by, the health officials, and when we're ready to open up shop, we'll do that. And so I think we still are in kind of in a wait and see mode as far as where we're going. Of course, that brings you up, to the point of what competitive balance, right? If teams in Oklahoma City can allow guys in their facility, but the teams and two teams in LA can't, where does that leave you? And I think that we'll see how that plays out. But I think, if it was to the point where, hey, you're allowing, your whole roster to come in and, work out with your coaches, yeah, I understand it. But I think it's so tempered right now where it's four guys, right? I mean, it's from a conditioning standpoint, yeah, I could see that. But I think things are really still limited right now.
Is this kind of, too, I guess you could say, I know they're very small steps, but I think you mentioned it. This is probably the best word to use it. That's kind of trying to take a proactive approach. Look, this could be coming down the road, and if it does come, we're going to do it in a very controlled manner. Safety is everything. I read something too that are a lot of the teams, are there safety concerns, or do they feel like, well, if players aren't working out in a facility where it's more of a controlled environment, what they don't want is those players to go to a regular gym or a park or something along those lines, where maybe the guidelines, maybe I guess you could say a controlled environment is a lot less controlled.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I think if you are, and they nipped that in that memo where it basically says that you still cannot work out in non-NBA type facilities here. So if you were, Trae Young in Atlanta, and if you're seeing that Georgia all of a sudden, some of these restrictions are loosened, I want to go get up shots at, Equinox Gym here. Well, now that cannot happen until your own facility is open up. So I think a lot of, as I said earlier, is proactive, because we will start seeing states lift some of their guidelines. I think Texas is coming soon, May 1st, I want to say. It's just basically to have teams have an answer when players want to come in and see this and say, well, no, we're not ready yet health-wise here. And the big concern, just with teams over the weekend was that hey, if Atlanta is the only state that's open, do we now need to send our players there, right? Like, is everyone going to start migrating to the Hawks facility? And that was basically a limit where that's going to be that's a non-factor right now.
Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN, Jordan Lakers Talk. Bobby, just your personal opinion, just kind of how things have progressed here. I think it's been, probably close to 6 weeks now. We were supposed to be in the middle of the playoffs and all these series were supposed to be going on. Do you feel more confident, less confident, in the last couple of weeks than just in regards to trying to get a season back up and going, or you still think it's just too early to tell and it's going to take kind of the approach Adam Silver has had, where he doesn't sell too much, doesn't try to overpromise, just is saying that as we get more information, we'll pass out that information.
But I just wanted to see from your perspective if you feel more confident or just about the same or maybe even less confident, whatever you think.
I probably feel the same. I mean, I think, you know, when, you know, I guess a month ago, you know, I was talking with another team and there was a consensus, like we're basically, if we're using baseball terminology, we were like in the second or third inning, right? So maybe we're in the fifth inning right now. We're kind of somewhere there. We're not, you know, we're not in the eighth or ninth inning. We're at the end game here. We're still trying to figure out. I think there's still so many factors because every state is different, right? Like, you know, New York and California and, you know, even on, you know, in Toronto, in Ontario is different than, you know, Phoenix and Oklahoma City where everyone is not equal here. So I still think, you know, I still think there's still a long way to go logistically to figure out where we're going to go. I think, you know, there is a long runway because I don't think there's a drop dead date right now where we say like, hey, we need to get going by June 15th or July 1. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think we will probably get there eventually. So I guess some days I feel more optimistic than others. I'm probably kind of stuck in that middle because I know it's going to take a lot of work to figure out how to squeeze in if we're going to squeeze in some regular season games and try to get a playoff in and maybe finish by Labor Day and not jeopardize 2020-21. How do we go out about doing that, and you know, how do we do it in all in one place, or you know, or is it different four different pods here? I think there's still a lot to kind of be figured out.
Bobby, I know one of the conversations, Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN on Lakers Talk. I know one of the conversations have been if and when we got the season to continue and you know, you tried finishing off however many regular season games that is and then whatever the playoffs would look like. Has there been a lot of conversation between players, owners, GMs, just concern from an injury perspective? What I'm referring to there is just the players are going through the season, maybe their bodies, by the time March rolled around, yes, you got some nagging injuries, but your body is accustomed to where you are, and then boom, everything just stops. And then to kind of restart it again, what is the thought process there of making sure that if they do ease back to basketball again, I guess you can say they try and limit the amount of injuries, and I know that's me just kind of spitballing here. Is that a conversation that's been had or a concern?
I think that's probably one of the bigger concerns here, is how do we transition back into, you know, I mean, like, the reality is that the shape, you know, these guys can, you know, try to be in the best shape they can be as far as doing things at home. But when they, if this eventually is lifted and they do come back to the facility here, I mean, I think it's going to probably, I think Jared Dudley said it best, it's probably going to take them a month, you know, of some type of modified training camp, which is more than what we would see in late September, October, just because you have, you know, August, September, you know, early October to kind of do things on your own and train on your own and being in your facility. But when we're all, you know, when all these guys are restricted as far as what type of access they have, you know, besides having a basketball hoop in their gym and maybe going out for a run, I do think it's going to take a while. And I think that is probably the biggest concern, certainly health-wise, from the coronavirus standpoint, but from a, you know, what type of condition they are going to be. And it's not like we're starting at game 24, right? I mean, sure. You know, guys will be competing for possibly a championship or trying to get into the playoffs. So you are maximizing, you know, like I think LeBron said, you know, hey, his body shut down in March. And how do you kind of restart that engine? And that's going to be the biggest challenge.
Bobby, final question. And again, I appreciate you joining the show. Last week, we got word that the CBA, the Chinese Basketball Association, was going to postpone things until July. Were you surprised by that? I know anytime we get information from how some of the Asian, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, just what their progress is, we're curious because maybe that's a blueprint to how we're going to get started again. Were you surprised that the CBA, Chinese Basketball Association, cancel things for at least until July now?
I don't know if I'm surprised. I think that's probably one of the biggest concerns for the NBA as far as if we, if we restart this in mid-June, let's say June 15th, will there be a point like the Chinese Basketball Association where we have to stop, where we have to hold, all together. And I think if that would probably be the doomsday scenario for, basically canceling the rest of the regular season here. And yeah, I mean, I think there is a little bit of a concern because we basically have been gauging what's gone on in, China or South Korea or Japan, some of these other leagues as far as kind of the blueprint as far as how we were going to get back on the court because they were, I guess, 8 weeks ahead of, with this virus going on. So I don't know about surprise. I think I would probably label maybe more concerned that it has taken them so long to kind of get back on the court.
Bobby, great stuff, man. Thank you for doing this. And I know it's always great insight when we have you on, so I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks.
All right, that's Bobby Marks right there. Great stuff from Bobby Marks. We'll see how this plays out. You know, I know I wanted to bring him on to talk about the Lakers training or talk about facilities starting to open up. Target day is May 8th. I just want fair game for, obviously, the Los Angeles Lakers and all these teams where the states are different. Okay, Power 5. Funches and I were game planning here. This is what we got. What's your starting lineup? What did we say, Funch? We're combining the 92 Dream Team and the 2008 Redeem Team.
Yes.
What's your starting lineup if you mix all these guys together? So that's what we're going to do. That's going to be our Power 5, all right? That's what we'll do coming back next. I put that up on Twitter. I got a lot of responses. I'll read yours as well. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, so quick reminder for tomorrow, 6 a.m., starting at 6 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. Sedano follows after that. Will Cain Show, Mason and Ireland from 3 to 6:30. I'll hop on at 6, do some crosstalk, Sliwa Show, Tuesday to Friday, 6:30 to 9. So every day this week we'll be doing the Sliwa Show. Funches, let's do some Power 5. You know, there's some beats that just don't get old. I think this is one of them, Funch.
Yeah, it's never really gets old. Good beat. Really good beat, man.
Never gets old. Okay, so this is what we're doing. If you combine the 1992 Dream Team and the 2008 Redeem Team, and you need to come up with a starting five, what's your starting five look like? By the way, Funch, you want to go small ball, you could go small ball. You want to go big guys, you could go big guys. So whatever five that you want to put in there, we can just do it kind of towards by position, but also do it by player.
Okay, cool.
I'm about to sneeze here. All right, I got it out. There we go. Allergies, man. Allergies hit.
Yeah, man. I mean, my allergies hit it this morning hard too, man.
Demolishing me. Okay, number five for you. Who are you putting at the center position?
Oh my God, I'm gonna get so much flack for this, man. But
who do you got?
I'm gonna go Dwight Howard. I'm talking peak Dwight Howard here. I'm not talking, the Dwight Howard we have now on the Lakers, but this is peak Dwight Howard when he was, defensive player of the year.
You're talking Orlando Magic days.
Defensive player of the year, blah, blah, blah. And you got to think about the Dream Team. They had a declining Patrick Ewing, a declining David Robinson kind of. So, I'm just looking at who has more upside.
So I'm going to go David Robinson. One thing about David Robinson that I absolutely loved, how smooth was D. Robinson? How smooth was he? He can knock down a 17-footer, a lefty, get to the basket. His defensive, I just love the way he played defense. I'll go David Robinson at my five. By the way, I'm picking David Robinson over Dwight, and I'm picking David Robinson over Patrick Ewing.
I thought you would go
Ewing.
Yeah, I kind of thought about going Ewing, but, wouldn't it be amazing if David Robinson played today and all the three-pointers he would be taking?
D. Robinson. You know what? David Robinson doesn't get talked about enough, but I think he's also not talked about simply because, just didn't have this personality where everyone was talking about him. So
MT talks about his arms all the time.
That's right. That's right. MT says, what'd he say? Have you touched his body or something like that? Whatever it is. Jesus. Okay. Who's playing power forward for you?
Number four, I got probably the greatest power forward ever, Karl Malone. And that's it. I don't have to say anything else. One of the greatest power forwards ever. Probably D next to Tim Duncan.
Okay. Malone's not on there.
Let me tell you why Malone's not on there. Don't call me crazy here. Don't call me crazy here. But I have a method to my madness. I'm going Bron at four. I need to put LeBron at four.
Okay. All right, man. Yeah.
I got to have LeBron do some dirty work for me. I got to have him kind of down low a little bit. Robinson's going to be with him. I'm going to go LeBron at four. I'll explain why LeBron is playing the power forward position. Who you got at number three?
Number three, LeBron.
Yeah. Okay, so LeBron's your small forward.
Greatest small forward ever.
Mm-hmm. I got LeBron already out of position.
Okay.
LeBron's already looking at me on the bench and complaining.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to guard these power forwards, man.
What are you doing, Al? That's what he's saying. Okay, but this is why I'm doing this. I got Kobe at my three.
Oh,
Kobe's
man.
My small forward.
Jeez. Now you got nothing
got
but killers on the floor.
And Kobe locking down. And I'm telling Kobe if he can play a little bit bigger, and you know Kobe's up for that challenge.
Wow. I didn't even think about Kobe at the three.
Who's your two?
Number two, who do you think? It's Deron Williams. Who do you think?
Nah,
it's Michael Jordan. It's going to be Michael
CP3.
Jordan. Michael Jordan will be my number two guard.
Okay, so Jordan goes to your two. Jordan is my two as well. What is who's your point guard?
Oh man, I had a.
By the way, can
time.
I just say something? Can What's I just that? Say something? The players that we're keeping off. Larry Bird's not on my list. Scottie Pippen's not on my list. Clyde Drexler is not on my list. Like. Barkley's not on my list. You know how good these players
are? Yeah,
were?
I know, right? Exactly. Exactly, man.
That's why this is such
they're
a
top
tough
50
one
players,
do.
Man. Top 100
oh,
players
yeah.
ever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
My point guard, I had it coming down between Magic Johnson and Chris Paul, and it was just a hard decision, but you got to go with the Hall of Famer, Magic Johnson.
That wasn't hard. That wasn't hard at all. But I know what you're saying. You're trying to look at it from like that.
Yeah,
you know,
like are they peak Magic Johnson or are they peak Chris Paul? Because Chris Paul was more at his peak around 2008.
I'll take Magic even today over Chris Paul at his peak. all right, but real quick.
50-year-old Magic Johnson.
Yeah, 50-year-old Magic. Let me say this about I got Magic at the 1-2. So this was so difficult because you were either going to have to keep off Jordan or you were going to keep off you're going to either keep off Jordan or you're going to keep off Kobe. So that's why I had to go small. That's why I had to go small there. Okay, Funch, I think we're wrapping up here. Another great show. Thank you for everything. Thank you to Bobby Marks. Thank you to Michael Thompson. Everybody that tuned in, always appreciate it. Follow me at Alan Sliwa. And don't forget, we're going to do this again starting at 6 a.m. in the morning. Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ. And as for me, you'll see me all week. Have a great week, L.A.